2 hours, and then I'm woken by the familiar call of the outside world beeping in my ear. Picking up my cell from the floor, I see Danny's name flashing. For a moment, I think about not answering, but then I take the call. His voice is completely unrecognizable, whimpering between sobs and pleading.
Please, Becca. Please come and say goodbye.
Danny. I feel his pain. Poor Danny. His spirit is on the verge of collapse.
The doctor says there's only a couple of hours left, Becca. Please come. I don't want you to regret staying away.
He has no idea where my head's at. What makes him think I've anything to regret? How's Dad? I say.
Not good. He keeps asking where you are. I told him you're down with food poisoning, that you're puking all the time, but he doesn't believe me. He knows something's up. Please, Becca.
His voice is pleading. I'm torn, ripped, sliced down the middle. If Dad doesn't know what's going on, he must be completely confused as to why I'm not there. Why his daughter, who spent so much time with her sick mother, isn't coming in to say goodbye, to be there with him, with her brother, with her mom. Oh, Jesus, it's not easy being Louise. I'll think about it, I say, then hang up.
He wants you to go in and see her,
Jeff says, from behind the kitchen island. I hope you're not thinking of cooking. I can't eat anything. Closing the door on the refrigerator, he walks back to the couch.
What do you think you should do?
He says. My head drops into my hands. What would you do? I ask.
Don't know. Would I want to say goodbye? Not really. Would I want to be there? Not really. Would I regret it later in life? Maybe. Maybe not. It's up to you, Becca.
It's Dad I'm worried about. What must he think?
Don't worry about him. He'll understand when he finds out the truth. This is about you. You and your mom. If we can still call her that.
He's right. This decision is about me, not Danny or Dad. I'm sick of spending my life trying to please other people. No. I'm doing this for me. I'm going to see her. Chapter 54. The room pulses with sadness when I open the door. Curtains pulled, candles flickering. A large vase of fresh lilies sits on the cabinet amongst all the lying photos. Danny is standing at the end of the bed, just standing there, completely still, hands wrapped around the metal bar. He glances up to see who's entered, and when he sees it's me, he smiles a little. His eyes brighten as he lets out a sigh of relief. If he thinks I'm here to play happy families, he can think again. Dad gets up from the chair by the side of the bed. His face is white like a ghost's, his burnt eyes blinking, making sure it's me he's looking at.
Becca,
he says. He hugs me, squeezing tightly, afraid I might float away if he lets go. After a few seconds, he whispers,
Are you feeling better?
I nod. Moving the chair closer to the bed, he tells me to sit down. I'm like a robot, doing what I'm told because I don't really know what I should be doing. Danny nods, letting me know he's grateful I came, probably praying I won't say anything, not here, not now. After a few minutes, I realize I can't hear their voices. I can see them, both of them, lips moving, heads nodding, tears flowing. But whatever they're saying is floating around the room, landing everywhere but in my ears. All I can hear is me asking myself, Why did I come here? What am I planning to do? Is Danny the killer? Eventually, Danny shakes me, then tells me that he and Dad are going to the coffee room to give me time on my own with Mom. Time for what, Danny? But I say nothing, watching as they drag themselves from the room. I haven't looked at her yet. Slowly, I let my eyes travel from her feet up to her face. Her shrunken, unrecognizable face. Her eyes are closed. Short wisps of breath leave her mouth every few seconds, the only sign that life is still clinging on. Her hand is resting on top of the sheet where Dad must have been holding it. Not really knowing why, I put her hand in mine and feel her cold, waxy skin against my own. Then I squeeze it. This hand, the hand that fed me, bathed me, brushed my hair, the hand that wiped my tears, soothed my pains, the hand that took me. I pull my hand away for a moment, breathing heavily, sweat gathering on my skin. What am I doing here? This woman abducted me. I want to leave, run away. I look at her face again, and this time I imagine the smile. The one that greeted me every morning. Those big blue eyes. I feel the heat that wrapped itself around my body with every hug. I hear her soft voice whispering that she loves me. Hear her singing, laughing, dancing. Why do I still love her? Suddenly, I know why I'm here. I came to tell her that I know. The cross on the bedside locker is flickering in the light of the candle. Jesus hangs here, hands and feet nailed. I feel like that. Like someone is torturing me. I look at his face, the calm face, forgiving us our sins. Then I look at Mom's. Did she know what she was doing? Or was she so distraught from the death of her baby that she just panicked? Was it too late afterwards to admit what she'd done? Everything had fallen into place nicely with Dad being away. She probably sent him photos of me during the year, so I'd look familiar when he returned. Did she spend night after night lying in her bed sleepless, imagining that knock on the door? The knock that never came? Glancing away from the dying woman, I let my head sink back into my shoulders and stare at the ceiling. This nightmare belonged to everyone, not just me. Danny and Mom as well, and Katie Collins, and my real mother. One moment of madness rerouting the lives of so many. What were you thinking, Mom? What was going on in your head? I wish I could talk to her now, but I can't. I'll never know what she was thinking that day. Did postpartum depression precipitate her madness, the death of Rebecca sending her into a frenzy? Or did she act with cold calculation to ease Danny's lifetime of regret? Whatever the reason, and maybe it was all of these things, I'll never know. Outside in the corridor, a trolley screeches as it passes by, reminding me where I am, that Dad and Danny will be back soon. I have only a few moments to do what I want to do. Leaning forward, I move my lips close to her ears. I know what you did. I know you abducted me. My heart swells as I smell her death closing in on me. Her shallow breaths moving further apart. Mom is leaving. Suddenly, I start to shiver all over, my teeth chattering, my hands shaking. Taking her hand, I press it to my face and feel the dry skin scrape my cheek. I loved this woman. I love this woman. My tears fall onto her face. I forgive you. Mom. Gently at first, then stronger, her hand squeezes mine. It only lasts a few seconds, but it's enough. Mom! Mom! I cry, letting my face fall onto hers, feeling her last breath on my lips. When the door opens, Nurse Lucy walks in, with Danny and Dad following behind. Danny stares at me, wondering will I burst this bubble of sadness that unites us. He seems more interested in me than his mom. The nurse moves to the bed, and I step away, turning my back on everything and everyone. I'm here trying to blank it all out, but Dad's sobbing follows me. There's no escape. The nurse's whisper is a small sound, big enough to destroy everything in its path. She's gone. Chapter 55. The two soldiers of grief lean against the wall. Danny, with his arm draped across my father's shoulder. Both faces blank with disbelief. She's gone. Nancy Wall is gone. Nurse Lucy is inside with some people from the funeral parlor, arranging the body so it can be taken away and prepared for the wake. The funeral will take place in 2 days' time at St. Brendan's. The body will lie in wait at Dad's house the previous night. I've been told all of this, and yet it feels unbelievable. Like she got away with it. Bowed out just when the shit was hitting the fan. Left the rest of us behind to try and fit all the pieces of her destructive jigsaw into place. Outside the window, a tree sways back and forth, its roots keeping it in place when all it seems to want to do is get away. I am that tree, stuck to this slip-proof flooring, wanting to run, my roots keeping me here. Part of me is sorry now that I told her I forgave her. I haven't forgiven her, but something came over me while I was in there by her side. A kind of peace, brought on by the numbing ambiance of the room. It seemed to seep into my soul, melt my anger. But the anger is back now. Brewing beneath the surface. How can Danny be so cool about all this? In the distance, I see Joanna rushing down the corridor, preened to perfection as usual. But as she gets closer, I see her red eyes, the stress carved into lines across her forehead. "I'm so sorry, Danny," she says, hugging her husband before she gives my dad a hug. Then she notices me standing at the opposite wall. "Oh, Becca," she cries. "I'm so sorry, Becca." She rushes toward me, flinging her arms out. I hug her back, feeling fake. This can't go on any longer. My mind is telling me to say it now, get it over with. Tell Dad I'm not his, that Nancy Wall is not my mother. But something is stopping me. I know that if I say it now, there's no turning back. The whole world will explode around me. After tossing thought after thought around my head, I decide to wait, to think about it. Take control, like Jeff said. Pick my moment. When Danny catches my eye, I give him a hard stare, reminding him of the pain I'm going through. He moves over to my side and whispers in my ear, "Don't crack now, Becca. Please hang in there. You're doing great." Doing great? What the fuck does he mean? "I have to go," I say, walking away from Danny, from Dad, from Joanna. Barry is standing outside the front door when I rush out with tears streaming down my face.
"Are you okay?"
he says, moving to the wall and beckoning me to follow. For some reason, I trust this man, and without thinking, I tell him everything that happened, everything that led to me being stripped of my identity. Barry listens without interference, offering his help if I need it. When we're finished talking, I walk away feeling better. But something is niggling at me, something Detective Turner said. I take out my phone and call her. "Detective Turner, I need to see you." She's sitting waiting on me when I arrive, her stiff, dark-eyed stare displaying unrelenting confidence.
"You wanted to see me?"
she says. "Yes. I wanted to ask you about the DNA sample you mentioned when we last spoke. I've no recollection of giving you any sample. Turner stretches her back into the chair.
Well, Becca, we didn't ask you for a sample. We got Dr. Josie Riley to do that.
What? I can't believe what she's saying. Was the whole clinical trial thing a setup, then? I say.
Oh, no, that was real. We just asked her to invite you on board.
I feel my heart thumping in my chest, but not in a nervous way. It's anger. How was I played like a fool?
Don't feel bad, Rebecca. We had to do what we had to do.
But you're no closer, are you?
No closer to what?
To finding the killer. I guess you know by now it isn't me, but you don't know who it is, do you?
We have our suspects, and yes, you are no longer one of them, but I still need you to answer my questions.
What the hell is she going to ask me now? I was the one who came to see her.
Did you ever find the note? This time, before you answer, remember we will find the killer, and if we find out you lied to us, you will be charged.
The bitch thinks she's scaring me. She's not. After what I've been through, it would take a lot more than her threats to scare me. No.
Did you ask your brother Danny about it?
Yes, he didn't see it.
Your father, Nicholas Wall, did you ask him?
Yes, he didn't see it.
Have you seen either of them using a phone that wasn't their usual one?
No.
I'm sitting here listening to this woman ask the same questions and expect a different answer. This woman who insisted I produce an alibi for the night of Katie's murder.
Did you need the alibi? Or did you know at that point it wasn't me?
She puffs air out of her mouth while placing both her two hands on the table. Rebecca, we had to keep the pressure on you. See what you would tell us.
Did you need the fucking alibi? I say again. You didn't. You had it already, didn't you? From the CCTV at Maddie's. My mind flashes back to Stephen Black shoving me against the wall. The shoe, the belt, the animal. Pushing my chair backwards, I head for the door. Next time you want to talk to me, call my lawyer. My whole body is shaking. I need some water or I'm going to faint. I can't believe I did that.
Turns out Louise has a lot more guts than Becca ever had.
Heading down the corridor, I stop to get some water from the vending machine. My mind is in turmoil. She thinks Danny or Dad killed Katie. The problem is, so do I. Back at Jeff's, the room feels lonely.
I was hoping he'd be here so I could tell him what happened with Turner, tell him how brave I was.
Maybe it's good he isn't here. I've been relying too much on the man over the last few days. I need to do things for myself, make my own decisions. But there is so much to think about, so much to decide, and this feeling of not belonging won't leave me. I feel separated from everyone else, awkward, like I've shown up to a funeral in fancy dress. I need to calm down. Relax. Louise, relax. So, I sit on the couch with a coffee from Jeff's fancy percolator. It took me ages to figure out how it worked, but I did. Slurping the foam, I lick my lips and consider doing nothing for a while, even an hour, just nothing. But it's impossible. My mind is in overdrive. I have to do something, but what? What do you do when you find out your mother who has just died is not your mother? That Becca Wall is dead, too. Has been for a very long time. And me?
What about me?
The girl I was last week, where is she? Also dead. A different kind of dead. With my mind bouncing from me to her to him to what the fuck, it finally settles on Katie Collins. Jesus, the woman died trying to find me, her long-lost sister, her baby's aunt. A gust of fear blows through my body. I'm weak and I want to puke. Did I cause all this? No, Mom did.
The woman Danny and Dad expect me to bury, standing in a black coat, shedding white tears beside the coffin. I don't know if I'll be able to do that. If I want to do that. I make myself another coffee and think about Louise. Baby Louise. The little girl whose mommy was killed. What's going to happen to her, growing up without her mom? Thank God she still has her dad, Thomas. Realizing I haven't called him yet, I decide to do it now. But where's his number? I know Jeff asked him for it when we were leaving the house in Algiers. I remember that much. It was just before I saw the pink coat. But I don't know what happened while I was staring in shock at the photograph. Hoping that Jeff might have put it into my phone, I grab my cell and flick through the contacts. Thomas Collins. There it is. My hand is shaking, mouth dry. I'm nervous about what he'll say when I tell him Katie was right. Will he hate me? Blame me? Curse me? It doesn't matter. I'll take whatever's coming. He has to know, and I want to tell him before Turner does. Chapter 56. Thomas Collins? My heart is thumping. I've never felt this nervous before, and I've had a lot of experience of late. Silence floats between us for a moment, and I think that maybe he's going to hang up.
Yes,
he says. Thomas, this is Rebecca Wall.
Rebecca Wall?
Yes, I came to see you last week about Katie. I was the girl she came to Boston to find.
Of course,
he says. I can't read him. Don't know if he's annoyed or interested, so I just spit it out. Katie was right. I am her sister. Thomas says nothing, but he doesn't hang up either, so I continue. I'm Louise. I was abducted when I was a few months old. It's only when I say these words that it strikes me. I don't even know my own birthday. This makes me want to cry, but I push the tears back. I can't cry now. It's important I stay strong. My mother took me. Her baby died, and she took me from my real mom, Katie's mom. Thomas remains silent, but he's still listening. I guess a guy in his situation gets a load of prank calls. Weirdos, psychos, broken people looking for someone else's pain to play with. I'm struggling with what to say next because I thought he'd have joined in by now. Katie was right this time, Thomas. I'm so sorry she was killed before she found me. I want to ask him what she was like. Her interests, her hates, the things she laughed at, the things that made her cry. What music did she like? There are hundreds of questions to be answered. But now is not the time. Thomas? I hear a sniffle. He's crying. Fuck. Thomas, I'm sorry if I upset you, but I wanted to be the one to tell you. I wait, but still he doesn't speak. He'd doubted her, and now she's dead. I know this is hard, Thomas. I'm gonna hang up, and you can call me back when you're ready to talk. I picture him nodding, even though I can't see him. Slowly, I take the cell from my ear and press the screen. End call. I'm feeling slightly liberated when I hear Jeff opening the door. He looks surprised to see me standing there smiling.
You look a lot better,
he says, glancing at the cell in my hand.
Who was that?
That was my brother-in-law, I say. Feeling weirdly excited, almost ecstatic. I have a real family, one where I rightly belong. It makes me feel so much better now that I know my identity. The last few days had left me feeling like a plastic bag being tossed by the wind. Go here. No, here. No, here.
What did he say?
Jeff asks, tossing his leather coat onto the back of the couch and heading straight for the refrigerator.
He grabs a handful of leaves and walks over to the rabbits.
Nothing.
Nothing.
Not a word.
Jeff turns to look at me.
How did that work?
So I tell him about the call, and it's obvious I'm a little too excited for Jeff's liking.
Becca, don't get upset if he doesn't ring back. This is all a massive trauma for him. It may be a while before he welcomes you with open arms, if he ever does.
Jeff has gone all sensible. Trying to prepare me for the worst, I guess. But what if Thomas Collins doesn't want to talk to me, or get to know me, or let me meet baby Louise? I hadn't thought of that.
One thing at a time, Becca.
Jeff says. He's right, I know. I need to calm down and not let my new identity fool me into thinking this world is my friend. I sit at the counter watching Jeff take ingredients out of the cupboards. He's making me eat again. I fill him in on how events unfolded earlier at Oak Ridge. Jeff assures me that I'd be more likely to regret not saying I forgive her than saying it, and that I shouldn't lose too much sleep because it doesn't really matter.
I'm not sure I agree with him. You have to make a decision, Becca. Only you can decide whether to go to the funeral or not.
I know. It's so hard, though. I didn't realize how hard until today when I had to stand with Dad and Danny pretending when all I wanted to do was run away. What if I feel that way at the funeral?
If you want to run away, run away.
What?
Becca, you're overthinking this. It's not about how you're going to feel. It's about how you feel now. Do you want to be at her funeral?
Hours later, I still don't have a clue what I want to do. I want to be at the funeral. I don't want to be at the funeral. It's like choosing my dress for prom all over again. She was with me that day, standing outside the dressing room, laughing at me. I put the same two dresses on at least 4 times each and still couldn't choose. I can't remember how I decided in the end. Maybe she did it for me. My cell rings. Thomas Collins? I rush to the counter and grab my phone. The number displayed is unfamiliar, but I'm pretty sure it's not Thomas Collins. Jeff's waiting on my reaction, so I shake my head to let him know it's not Collins and answer the call.
Becca Wall?
I recognize the voice, the deep, considerate tone.
Becca, it's Barry from Oak Ridge.
Hi, Barry. I'm about to tell him I'm fine now, and that he's very good for checking up on me when he says,
I shouldn't be doing this, but I got your number out of the client's contacts book and, well...
Well, what?
Becca, I found something. You need to get down here.
Chapter 57. I didn't think I'd ever be back at Oak Ridge, but here I am, parking my car in its usual spot, heading for the door. A chilly breeze is brewing up into the storm that's forecast. Barry asked me to wait until after 8, said there'd be fewer eyes watching him. I felt like I was waiting for days, mind racing, wondering what Barry had discovered that was so important he wanted me to see it for myself. Something on the tapes, maybe? Or something in Dr. Riley's room? All I'm hoping is that I haven't come all the way out here to find something I already know. I see Barry behind the reception desk as I approach. Seeing me coming, he stands and walks to the door.
Becca,
he says, pulling the door open.
Is it still Becca?
Becca's fine. I walk with him to the reception area where I expect the big reveal to unfold, but I've forgotten how Barry works. Forgotten his motto. The slower you go, the quicker you get there.
How are you doing, Becca?
He says, walking through reception and on towards the corridors where Dr. Riley's office is. He continues to make small talk, asking about the traffic, commenting on the cold night.
but reading my stress levels, which must be clearly on display, he changes his tone to tell me why he called me here.
When the body was taken away this afternoon, he says, I was called in to supervise the clearing out of Nancy's room. It's part of the job, making sure everything goes back to the rightful owners.
We're arriving at the entrance to the corridor that leads to Dr. Riley's room, but he passes by, taking me further on down the corridor instead, stopping to push open a door with a staff-only sign. He ushers me inside.
I often lend a hand, packing things or wrapping stuff while the rest of the staff are disinfecting everything, he says.
I look around the room. There are boxes and boxes on wooden shelves covering the walls on both sides of the room. Every box has a name, ward location, and a date scribbled on the side of it.
Sometimes they never come back to collect their loved ones' bits and pieces,
he says, pushing a small ladder out of his way.
But we hold them here, just in case, for 5 years, then they're removed.
I want to tell him to hurry, that I can't stand being in a room full of dead people's things. But I don't want to sound ungrateful, so I keep my mouth shut and listen.
There's some good stuff in here,
he says, bending over to pull out a box from the lowest shelf.
Here it is.
He plonks a cardboard box marked Nancy Wall, Room 26, onto a countertop. Then, taking his keys out of his pocket, he chooses what looks like a small knife and slices open the lid.
What is it? I say.
I'll let you see for yourself,
he says, standing back from the counter so I can move in closer. I look at him, nervous, before lifting the cardboard flap and glancing inside. At first, I don't notice anything out of the ordinary, just a bundle of folded nightgowns. The smell is familiar when I pull them out and place them on the table. It's the smell of Mom. Not the fresh, flowery scent that used to radiate from her when she lived at home, but the sanitized version I've become accustomed to since she entered this place. While lifting a second pile of clothes out of the box, something catches my eye. It's small and black, lying on top of a bunch of towels.
I thought you should know,
Barry says as I turn to look at him. I'm afraid to touch it.
It's one of those untraceable ones. When you told me earlier that's what was used to contact the dead girl, I thought you should know. After all, Nancy Wall had no need for a cell phone.
He's right. Mom never owned a cell phone, even when she was capable of using one. If someone needs to talk to me, they can use the house phone, she'd say when we tried to coax her into getting one. This cell phone did not belong to her. Someone left it here. No, hid it here. But who would do that? I think I know, but I'm afraid to accept the obvious answer. I don't think I should touch it, Barry. He nods his head like I've just answered a tough question correctly.
Do you want to take it with you?
He says. I think about this for a moment. Should I call the cops? But what will they do? Send it to be fingerprinted and waste another few weeks waiting for the results? No, I can't wait that long for an answer. I need to know who hid this phone in Mom's room. I'll take it with me. Try to find out what I can before taking it to the cops. Barry goes to a nearby sink and removes two plastic gloves from a box hanging on the wall. Then he places the cell phone in a plastic bag and hands it to me. He knows, and I know, that there are only two people who could have put this here, Dad or Danny. Mom never had any other visitors except me. Did you open it?
No, I tried, but the battery's dead.
When we pack up the box, I take it in my arms and leave the room.
This is all that's left of Nancy Wall now. Just things. Things she couldn't take with her. I'll tell the cops I found it when I searched the box at home, Barry. I won't tell them you had anything to do with this. He nods like he's not particularly bothered whether I do or not, then takes me back out to the reception area. The thought of driving back to the city scares me. Everything scares me now. I should have let Jeff drive me out here when he offered, but my newly acquired independence decided it would be best to go on my own, for Barry's sake. Arriving with someone else in tow might have unnerved him, made him less willing to reveal his discovery. Fuck independence. Now I'd give anything not to be alone. Chapter 58. The cold wind seems to have disappeared, or else I can't feel anymore. My hands are busy carrying the box, so I bite my lip to make sure I can feel. Blood seeps into my mouth. It tastes of steel. Am I made of steel now? I hope so. Driving home in the darkness, the black cell phone cripples my mind. It's as if I've found the murder weapon. I know I should bring it to Turner, but I want to see what I can find out myself first. And I want to be sure it's the phone that made the fateful call to Katie Collins. If it is, it means Danny or Dad arranged to meet her in Tree Hill Park that night, the night she was killed. Jeff rushes to meet me when I come through the door. Taking the box from my hands, he sets it down on the coffee table.
"What is it?"
he says. Flopping down on the couch, I watch his face while taking the cell phone from my pocket. "This?"
"A cell phone?"
he says, looking disappointed. Then he realizes what the cell phone represents.
"You mean..."
"Yes."
"Christ, Becca, what are you doing with it?"
"It was found in Mom's room at the back of her bedside locker when they were cleaning it out."
"Take it to the cops, Becca."
Stomping away from me, he says,
"You know what this means. This is too fucking serious. You've got to protect yourself."
"Do you have a charger that fits this?" I say, walking towards the kitchen cupboards.
"Becca, don't you hear what I'm saying to you? You can't play games. You need to do the right thing."
Anger starts to boil up inside me. This is my life. Louise Johnson's life. Doing the right thing was for Becca, for the pushover. I'm taking charge now. I'm going to find out if this is the cell that contacted Katie Collins, and if so, who sent the text. Jeff places his hand on my arm. "Don't touch me!" I shout, pulling away from him.
"But Becca..."
"And stop calling me Becca!" Everything stops. With his mouth open, Jeff stands frozen to the spot. In my hand, the cell sits like a grenade ready to be dropped into the dugout where I'm hiding. Hiding from the truth. My mother is not my mother. My father is not my father. Danny is not my brother. One of them is a killer. My sister is dead. Becca Wall is dead. All this and more. And Jeff wants me to go to the cops? After a moment of silence, I look up at him. "I will go to the cops, Jeff. But give me a day. Just a day. Turner won't know how long I've had the phone, and with the funeral and everything. Please, Jeff? I promise I'll go then. Just one day." He turns to look directly into my eyes.
"I think you're mad,"
he says.
"Completely mad."
"I don't doubt it."
"So, how are you going to find out who sent the text?"
Considering his question, I walk to the sofa and sit down. Whoever made contact with Katie Collins had to have had her number. The number was on the note she left at Dad's house. If Dad had it, it's long gone by now. I've searched that house from top to bottom. But if Danny was the one who found the note, then there's only one thing for it. I have to search Danny's house. But how will I do that without them knowing?
I have to find that note, Jeff.
And how will you do that?
I'll just keep looking. It has to be somewhere. Exhaling like he's trying to blow the situation away, Jeff stares at the wall.
I guess,
he says, in a defeated tone, like he's fed up with me,
fed up with all this.
Look, Jeff, if you want me to move out, I will. I don't want to drag you any further into this. Shaking his head, he walks towards his bedroom door.
No, it's okay, Becca. Or Louise,
whatever.
I'm just exhausted. I need to get some sleep. Stay, go. Get what you want.
Outside the window, gray clouds rush across the sky, creating shadows and shapes. A man in a cloak, a wolf, a devil, a Danny. The room feels empty again, just me and my secrets. I can hear Jeff's bed creak as he crawls beneath the duvet. On the wall behind my head, a clock tick-tocks, reminding me I'm running out of time. In the middle of the coffee table, the cell phone sits, the grenade, the pin still in place. It's hard to ignore the damage it will do when I pull that pin. How will I even get into Danny's house without him knowing? Has Dad a key? I don't think so, and I doubt I'd be able to find it, or even recognize it if he did. Think. Think. The wake. They'll all be at my dad's tomorrow night for Mom's wake. With Joanna's parents living in Florida, Joanna's grandma is coming to babysit Liam to enable both Joanna and Danny to attend. That's it. That's when I'll get into Danny's house, during the wake. Now, how do I get past daughtery old Mrs. Cooper? Chapter 59. It takes a few minutes for Mrs. Cooper to answer the door. At one point, I think she isn't going to, that I'm going to have to come up with a new plan to get into Danny's. But then the light from the back room streams out into the hallway. She's on her way. Earlier, I decided to show up at the wake for a little while. Not that I wanted to, but the less attention I draw to myself, the better. Joanna was serving tea and drinks, keeping the show on the road. I stood in the corner of the room, feigning heartbreak, shaking the hands of a few relatives when Danny approached.
Thanks for showing up, Becca, he said. I know it must be hard for you.
I'm doing it for Dad, I replied,
wondering how the hell he'd know if it was hard for me or not.
When the room got crowded, I snuck out the back door and walked the short distance to Danny's house. Mrs. Cooper pushes her face up against the glass pane. Her gray hair is standing on her head like a bird's nest, her skin covered in face powder like a loaf ready to go into the oven. Wrinkles circle her squinting blue eyes as she strains to see who's there. It's me, Mrs. Cooper, I wave, smiling. Her feeble hand struggles to unlock the door, but eventually she succeeds.
Becca, she says, come in.
Mrs. Cooper is Joanna's closest relative living in Boston. I've met her at a few family events since Joanna married Danny. She likes me because I always spend time talking to her. How's Liam? I say, walking past her into the hallway. The door on my right is where Danny's office is. If the note is anywhere, it's there. He's not going to leave it lying around for Joanna to find.
Were you sent here to check up on me?
Mrs. Cooper says with a short chuckle. No, not at all. I'm just here to collect something for Danny. Walking into the room she came out of, I wait for her to follow. I want to be sure she's out of the way while I search. He wants me to find a photo of Mom that he thinks is in his office. It's for the top of the coffin. Gosh. 25 years living with professional liars has rubbed off on me.
I was very sorry to hear about your mom passing, Becca. She was a lovely woman.
So she fooled you too, I think. The sound of Liam's baby snores echo from the monitor on the table. They must have it on full volume. Mrs. Cooper sits down and I chat to her for a few minutes before saying, I better have a look for this photo.
Do you want me to help you?
No, I'll be fine, thanks. It's probably best you stay with the monitor.
Oh, yes,
she says, as if just remembering why she's there. Out in the hallway, I approach Danny's office, hoping he's not one of those men who keep their personal spaces locked in case the little wife messes up what she doesn't understand. Thankfully, he's not. The door opens first try. The smell of fresh paint hits me when I step inside. It's dark, the curtains drawn, so I switch on the light to reveal a desk, a chair, and a cabinet. Well, this shouldn't take long. Starting with the desk, I rummage through its drawers but find nothing that resembles a note from Katie Collins. The cabinet takes longer. Reams of paper clog every drawer. I flick through everything as quickly as I can, but again, this yields nothing. With my butt resting on the cabinet, I put my hands behind me on the top and look around to see where else he could have hidden it. My fingers are gripping the edge of the cabinet when one of them bumps against something and I hear a click. Turning to investigate, I see that the top of the cabinet lifts up, revealing a secret drawer. My eyes widen, my mouth opens, my heart speeds up.
Did you find it?
Shit. Mrs. Cooper is outside, about to come in. Pushing the lid closed, I rush to the door and turn the key, calling out to her that I'm almost done. Her feet shuffle away, and I breathe a sigh of relief. Back at the cabinet, I pull on the lid, but it's locked and won't budge. Fuck it. What did I do the first time? I place my fingers under the edge, tapping every inch like I'm playing a piano upside down, but nothing. What the hell? I get down on my knees and scrutinize every inch, but I can't see anything standing out. Back to where I was when it opened, resting my butt on the top, my fingers gripping the underneath, I hear a click. Bingo. I see a rabbit. Not a real rabbit or even a toy rabbit. It's a picture of a cardboard cutout with a naked girl sitting on it. Playboy, October 1971. $1. Jesus, Danny. Pushing the magazine to the side, I lift some cards in my hand. Birthday cards, all from the one person with the one message written inside. All my love, Hannah. Oh my God. If Joanna gets her fingers on that elusive secret button, Danny is dead. Hannah Boyd was the girl Danny went out with for years before he met Joanna. I'm not sure who finished with who. At 17, you don't really care about your brother's love life, but I do remember tears. Placing the cards back where I found them, I shuffle through the rest of Danny's memorabilia and notice a small plastic bag stuffed in the corner. The soft wool itches my hand as I pull out the contents. Baby socks. White, knitted socks covered in old dirt and soil. They can't be, can they? Blood rushes to my head. My stomach lurches. These are Becca's socks. He must have taken them off her little feet while she lay in the ground. But he couldn't have done that when he was 3 years old. Danny must have returned to the scene of the crime at some point as an adult. I stare at the socks with the lacy top, gently running my fingers over the pattern. Funny, I never did like socks with lace trimmings. The noise of Mrs. Cooper once again shuffling down the hallway breaks in on my trance and reminds me of why I'm here. The note, Louise, the note. But I can't find it. It's nowhere in this, Danny's secret world. I say my goodbyes and walk out of the house to where the cold night encircles me. I think about Danny, his secrets, his pretending, and I wonder what else he's hiding. The fact that the note is not in his secret drawer, which I've no doubt is where he'd keep it if he did have it, does not mean he didn't destroy it. Having secrets is a way of life for him. The question is, how far would he go to keep them? Chapter 60. I can't go today, Jeff. I'm going to the funeral.
What about afterwards?
Jeff is not letting go of the promise I made him. He thinks I should be down at the police station now, cell in hand. I didn't tell him about Danny's secret drawer because I know he'll jump to conclusions, and he already thinks Danny is the killer. Asking for help with the zip on my dress, I walk into his bedroom. Jeff is dousing his clear skin with some sort of shaving lotion. It smells a bit strong for my liking, but I say nothing, presuming the overbearing poison will die down after a while.
Black suits you,
he says, taking hold of the zip and tugging it up. I can't tell if he's being funny or serious because I have my back to him, so I turn around. I'm always in black, I say, watching him repress his urge to laugh as his eyes look me up and down.
Well then, dresses suit you.
I blush, thinking he may have given me a compliment, and leave the room. My mind is shredded. I can't think or focus. I know the game is over if I give Turner the cell phone, and while I should be happy about that, I'm not. The truth, staring me in the face, is not what I want the truth to be. I don't want Danny to have murdered Katie Collins. So I'm searching for reason after reason for this not to be the case. Like, what if he didn't meet Katie to kill her? Katie may already have been dead before he had a chance to meet her. It's possible. She could have collided with some mad psycho who was at Tree Hill Park that same night. As soon as this day is over, as soon as Nancy Wall is laid to rest, I'm going to confront him. The black suit hangs on my father like it's still on the hanger. The man has almost disappeared, his skin a mere coat of paint covering his bones. Outside the church grounds, with Dad's arm around my shoulder, I listen to his cries as the coffin is lifted out of the funeral car. His body trembles by my side as I hug him tightly. It'll be okay, Dad. She's in a better place. I think about these words, ready-made phrases that sound like they were rented from Hallmark. She's no longer in pain. She's had a good life. How does anyone know that she's in a better place? That woman could be in hell right now. The crowd follow us up the aisle as we take our place in the front row, Danny on my left, Dad on my right. I don't feel like I'm here, not really. It's like I'm in a play or something. Detached from it all and yet pulling off a great performance. The priest performs his role to perfection, too, leading us all back down the aisle, having convinced us that it's all part of God's great plan. Nearer, my God, to thee, rings out from the balcony above. When we get outside, a gust of wind shakes the trees circling the churchyard, but I don't feel it. My body is numb. None of this is really happening. I shake a few more hands, shed a few more tears, and wait. It will be all over soon, this pretense. The truth is only a few hours away. Dad will know what happened while he was away with the army, and Danny will have to admit if he killed Katie Collins. There's no way out for him. I have the phone, which I hope has the fingerprints. 3 miles reminiscing in the back of a limousine is not what you want when you know the stories are all tainted by the small fact that none of them are true. They may have happened, all right, these great memories from the past, but Becca wasn't there. That was me, I want to say. That was Louise. But I don't. Instead, turning my attention to the everyday normality behind the limousine's window, we arrive at the graveside. To the best plot in the cemetery, according to Dad, under a tree.
She loved trees,
he says, getting out of the car. But I don't remember that about her. Don't remember too much about her anymore. Everything is fading quickly. I'm losing Becca, too. Standing beside the priest, Danny tells everyone how great Nancy Wall was. His words are like gravel in my ears, scratching at my brain.
On the opposite side of the coffin, Jeff stands straight, hands behind his back in his black leather jacket. He winks at me, smiling, letting me know I'm not alone. Barry from Oak Ridge is standing behind him. I didn't recognize him at first without that awful brown uniform. The priest says a bunch of prayers and the coffin is finally and forever lowered into the ground. Pain shoots through my hand. It's Dad. He's squeezing far too tightly. Watching his wife disappear out of sight is breaking my hand. Suddenly, I feel sad. At least, I think it's sadness, though it's hard to describe. Am I letting Louise down if I feel sad? With tears of confusion beginning to blur my sight, I raise my eyes away from the ceremony and see a cop car driving into the cemetery, followed closely by another. What's going on? Surely Turner hasn't come to hassle me while I'm at a funeral. Doubt swells into fear, and I try to get Jeff's attention, but he's not looking at me. Look at me, Jeff. The cars are moving closer, coming up behind the parked limousines. I glance back to where Jeff is standing, and this time he's watching me. Nudging my head to the right, I alert him. Jeff eventually realizes what I'm doing and looks over to see what's unfolding behind him. Stepping backwards, he disappears behind the crowd, and the next time I see him, he's walking over towards the cop cars. What's he going to do? Stop them? The first cop car slows to a halt and out steps Detective Turner. My heart somersaults in my chest. Pulling on her jacket, she glances around the cemetery before fixing her eyes on the crowd gathered by the open grave. As far as I can tell, no one else seems to have noticed her yet. Everyone's still gaping at the hole in the ground. My mouth fills with water. The contents of my stomach race toward my mouth. If they don't cover that coffin soon, I'm going to puke on it. Releasing my hand from my father's grip, I step backwards until I'm out of sight. The vomit jolts from my mouth onto the grave in front of me. Joseph Best, loving husband and father. Marble stones and Celtic crosses swirl into a blurred picture like some gothic movie trailer. So I lift my head upwards and pull deep breaths into my lungs. Relax, Becca. Relax. Then I feel somebody's arms encircle me.
It's over, Becca. She's gone.
Danny hugs me tightly, whispering in my ear.
No matter what happens or happened, Becca, you'll always be my sister. I love you.
He kisses my forehead, lingering, unable to pull away. His tears drop, mingling with mine as they flow down my face. Was it you, Danny? I whisper.
Was what me?
He says, pulling his head back, his confused eyes staring into mine. Behind him, the crowd hushes, everyone standing still as Detective Turner moves closer.
Was what me? Becca?
Daniel Wall, I am arresting you for the murder of Katie Collins. You have the right to remain silent, but anything you say...
Her voice fades to a muffle. Stumbling backwards, his eyes locked on mine, Danny says,
Becca?
I'm frozen, unable to move. The sound of handcuffs echoes in my head as they pull him away. And in that moment, in that stare, those searching eyes struggle to understand what's happening. I believe in my heart it wasn't him. Danny did not kill Katie Collins. Chapter 61. A shocked silence. Then Joanna screaming, Danny! Danny! Stumbling over a graveled grave, she tries to reach her husband. She's only a few feet away when a cop puts out a thick, muscled arm to block her. Danny! She cries, her voice screeching with fear. Danny is saying something. I can see his lips moving, but I can't make out his words. Glued to the spot,
a human headstone amongst all the granite. My gaze follows his black suit as it moves further and further away. The buzzing in my head is soon replaced with the muffle of